Welcome back to Breakthrough, Waking Up to the Real You. I am your host, Alejandra Bevanco. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's a new Monday. There is a new book. And first, I want to remind you of the books we've done so far. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, not only do I have personal stories and some lessons that I've learned, lessons that I missed, lessons that I'm still learning, but also I have shifted the conversation a little bit to books, what books work for me. They may work for you on your journey, and they may not. That's why I'm trying to get different books, different stories, different perspectives, and it's kind of like we're on the kitchen table, just having a conversation, you know, having a drink while we discuss some books. So this whole journey with the book started with A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And then we moved to The Choice by Dr. Eger. And next we have The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. And then again, we went back to Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. And the last book we've talked about, Yesterday I Cried by Ian Levenzant. All of those books have something in common. They are along the lines of self-help, self-healing, aligning with your true self, the power of consciousness and understanding that we go beyond what we've been told and how to reprogram our brains, understanding that life is and then what we're living is our perception of it. So a lot of the things that happen stays in our minds and they happen in our minds depending on how you have lived. And the only way for us to get clear and to stay present is to go back in time and confront whatever it is that we have blocked from our minds. And it's not about sitting around and waiting for something to click. It's just trusting the process, getting comfortable with the unknown, leaning into a little bit of what we may not understand. And it may sound a little bit strange for some, but that is the best way I can communicate some of the things I've learned. One of the most powerful books for me, as I've said many times, has been Yesterday I Cried. Not because necessarily of the story per se, it's a whole lot of things that come together to express something that relates to me. I find it close to home. And the person who writes the book is someone who directly speaks to me in a way that I can understand, accept, and I am willing to make space for them to come into my energy. And then I can say, I will change the way I communicate, or I will learn how to communicate this. I will assess. And the only way we all know that we are stepping into that new self, new identity, is by overcoming challenges. It is easy for us to read the book and then believe that, yep, this is true, and never do anything about it. Life comes in and says, okay, let's put it into practice. And that's how we are in the midst of a lesson, when we feel challenged, when we feel like we're going to be emotionally involved in something, we're going to go back into our old habits. And it's okay to do that as long as we know that we need to pull ourselves out of that. And everything that happens, you know, what Eckhart Tolle says, the drama that we create stems from our core beliefs and the way we have been programmed into thinking and believing. You know, whatever you believe of yourself and whatever you think people perceive of you and whatever you think your story is, that makes a great impact in your life. So I want to share with you something, and then I'm going to tell you what book we're going to be doing. So after I finished Yesterday I Cried, I took a couple of days to just reassess. And as you know, I have two cats. They are my first, I would say, pets that are, you know, I've had two hamsters in the past, one when I was younger, and then one when I moved to the suburbs the first time from Los Angeles. They didn't need any type of care. It was just, you know, it was very easy. It was familiar to me. I knew what it was. When I moved to where I am today, the two cats were purchased, two Maine Coons, two girls. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Maine Coons are a breed that they are kind of like an in-between if you are a dog, or, you know, if you want a dog but you cannot care for a dog, you can get a Maine Coon that gets close to whatever a dog, a dog's personality would be, or that type of interaction, that type of relationship. They are very, well, my girls are very close to me. They are emotionally attached to me. They are very happy as far as I can tell. And we have developed like a healthy relationship where they know I know. There's a nonverbal communication. So let's see. One of them, their names are Lilo and Lola. If you want to get to know them, you can go on my Instagram at alevivanco29. I post them. Right now, they are a year and 6 months, I believe. They were born in April 19th of 2021. And I am very sensitive to creating pain. I know what it is to be in a position that where you have somebody else that has power over you, or they are responsible of you, and they don't see the signs when you are upset or when you're sad. Because sometimes we don't even know we feel that way when we're younger. We kind of just in hindsight see that we were in pain and nobody saw it, or if they saw it, they didn't care. And I have learned from taking care of these pets that's a big issue for me. That's kind of like a sensitive topic, because I know what it is for somebody not to read between the lines, because I'm not able to communicate how I feel. Not because I don't want to, because I, you know, looking back, I wanted somebody to see that. I wanted somebody to read between the lines. I wanted to be worthy enough of somebody to care that much. It didn't happen that way. And you guys know my story. You can go back and listen to it. But when it comes to failure, so we're adding on top of that. That's kind of like an Ian Levanzant exercise. If you listen to the book, it's just prior to this episode, it's all Yesterday I Cried, and she does great exercises where she tries to figure out why she's getting stuck in the moment. So on top of that, I fear failure. It has shifted from career, because I used to be very focused on career and what's going on with my career, and I cannot fail. And if I would go to an audition and I wouldn't do a good job, and I believed that I could do a better job, but I didn't do it enough because of nerves, or because I wasn't as prepared as I thought, blah, 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 then I would, you know, it would be catastrophic in my mind. And one of my cats, they're still young enough, and because they're ladies, there's this thing that when it comes to cats, cats can hide their pain because that's a way of them to survive in the wild. So that's embedded in their DNA. So you have to be very alert, aware of what's happening with them, so that you're able to make the best choices for them. So they're not going to tell you what's going on unless it's something that they cannot hide anymore. And by that time, it's too late. Cats are prone to issues with like UTIs or urinary issues in general. Both of them have different personalities. They are same litter. Everything's the same. They're both from basically the same mom and dad. One of them, the polydactyl one, she's very sensitive. And I noticed that from the beginning. Like, I could tell that she was a very sensitive and vocal cat. And so, and she is always asking for attention and wants to be with you, and she doesn't want to be, you know, without you all constantly. The other one is, has learned how to be more vocal, but she can stand on her own. And she's a very sweet girl. Both of them are. But one of them demands your attention constantly. And I am aware of that. So I've always tried to lean into that more and always giving her extra attention, balancing that with the attention Lilo, my other cat, gets. And I remember when I was getting cats, I had an agreement with the person that I was going to purchase a red Maine Coon, the same litter. They sent me a picture and said, I just want the boy. And I was prepping for one. And then the lady said, please take two cats because, you know, I don't have space. And, you know, they're from the same litter. It's better for a cat to have a litter mate so they can keep each other company. So I agreed to two cats. So technically, I was going to go to the woman's house. I was going to get the red cat and then Lilo. And then my more sensitive cat, Lola, would go somewhere else. At that time, I wasn't really aware of what was going to happen to her, but my agreement was both cats. When I got to the house, there was a misunderstanding, and the red cat was already in Ohio, and the lady that was bringing the cats from Indiana, Peru, Indiana, she was she had both of these girls, and she had the mother. Unfortunately, the mother, during the trip, she pooped herself. So both the lady that I made the agreement with and the one that brought the cats, they went to, you know, clean her. And I remember they gave me Lilo and they put her in the crate. And then I remember this very clear picture of Lola. She was 12 weeks old. She didn't know what was going on. And it was a multiple stories, like a vertical type of house in the city. And she was by the stairs and she was crying. Like, she was very loud. But I didn't know what was going on at the time. Like, there were a lot of cats in the house, like older cats. But she specifically caught my attention. Once they finished and they told me, you know, that there was a misunderstanding. The lady said, I wanted to sell the polydactyl extra thumb, you know, at a higher price, but you know what, because you're already here and I promised you two cats, take the girls. So I took them. I developed a relationship with them. It's very tough when they're very young because I had to wake up really, really early to be with them, and they both would get on top of me and they didn't want to let go of me. And at the time I was working at a retailer store where I had to go to work at, I had to be there by 6 a.m. So it was a whole thing. We've been through ups and downs and all of that. But, you know, over time, I learned their personalities, and that image always stuck with me. And now I thought, because I'm used to doing this, I thought that I was being dramatic, and I thought that I was just babying her too much by giving her attention or just holding on to that image of her. But over time, she has kept that trend of being vocal and being needy. So people that say that, oh, cats don't really care about you, it depends on the cat's personality. Cats are not usually like dogs, but it depends on the personality of the cat. Some cats, especially the Maine Coon breed, can be, you know, emotionally sensitive. They can be a little bit dependent on you more than what you would expect just a regular cat. So when I had my brother and his best friend came for, we went to a concert by the end of August. I don't know if you know this group, Rammstein. They are a German group. We bought the tickets back in 2019. The pandemic happened, and we had then been waiting until, obviously, this year, 2022, to see them. And so it was going to be a quick trip. They were going to stay at a hotel, and we were going to have basically 3 days where I would show them around. We would go to the concert, and then I would take them to the airport, and that would be the end of it. And if you don't know already, cats are creatures of habit. They like what they like, they do what they do, and they know their times. So at that time, I knew that the first day was going to be tough on them because I wasn't going to be home. Now, I'm home a lot. Unless I have to go do something, I'm not leaving my house. I'm doing everything from home now. And I left really early. I brought my brother and his friend just for them to see the house. And then we left again. When I came back that night, Lola started to do a dance that she has done when she was very, very young. And I remember we took her to the emergency room, and the lady said there was nothing wrong with her. So she would go in the litter box, pee, come out, go back into the litter box, pee again. So pee is coming out constantly, coming out again, going back. And so there's this dance. When she was around, when I had her at 12 weeks, and then a month after that, she did the same thing, but she was too young to have a UTI. So, but she wouldn't pee. She would just go into the litter box, like try to go through the sand, come out, go again, come out. So we took her to the emergency room, and nobody could take a sample from her because she didn't have any pee. So, the lady from the emergency room said, oh, she might think she has she wants to go to the bathroom, but there's nothing in her that we needed to take a sample. There's nothing in there, so she doesn't have a UTI. That was the end of it. She never did it again up until this time. And that night, I was supposed to go out again, and she that night peed blood. There was a little bit of blood in her pee. Now, when cats are stressed, there are different things that happen to them. One of them is that. And I had already given her her food, and she vomited the whole thing. So she was highly stressed. So, okay, she's stressed, so we need to calm her down. And she would lay on her side and put, like, stretch out her paw, trying to reach out to me. And, you know, to some extent, some people may say, wow, what a dramatic cat. But and it's true. It probably may be perceived as that. But it's just that that's who she is. She cannot communicate to me anything but in her actions or behavior. So we watched her. Everything was back to normal. You know, everything went on according to plan. The week after that, everything was fine. Then something happened again, and then she went back into the litter box, and she started doing the dance again. Now, I didn't know why, because I was home, everything was back to normal, but something must have triggered her to the point of I started to say, should I take her to a vet? Because if this is behavioral, then eventually it will stop. On top of that, she has already been stressed because of the stress of her not seeing me, and then she was peeing, and then the blood and all that. And taking a cat out of their environment, it's also a big stress on them. They don't like being taken out. They don't like being put in a carrier. My cats are strictly indoors. So this is their house. This is their territory. And coming out of their territory, they already know they're going to go to a place they don't want to go, which is the vet. At this point, I had already vaccinated them. I was paying a monthly fee for both of them to a hospital that it just wasn't worth it, because the hospital, you know, they tell you, hey, you pay a monthly fee, and then everything that we need to do to them, if they get sick, if they need vaccines, whatever it is they need, it's going to come in cheaper because you're paying this monthly fee. The problem is that when you do that and you have a bunch of people, you don't have a lot of workers, you have probably one or two doctors on staff tops, and you have limited hours, if your pet is sick, you're probably not going to be able to see a doctor for a week. And that happened. That I knew when I was working at the veterinarian hospital that some people would, you know, be in town and they would want to come in because they had an emergency with their pet or they had an issue with their pet and they wanted to be seen right away. But the way that the hospital that I worked in worked was that unless we had seen your pet before, it would be very tough for us to fit you in the schedule. Because how it works mainly in any doctor's office, I believe, is that they have a schedule where they have their appointments booked. And then they leave spaces for same-day appointments and then also for emergencies. So it's easier for a doctor's office to fit you in if they have already seen you. They have your medical records. There's a medical history. It's easier to fit you in because the doctor already know who he or she is going to see instead of seeing somebody new. So I hadn't looked for places to take my cats because, again, they're very young. You know, you usually see issues with cats when they're older. And I already know that Maine Coons have a couple of things that happen to them over time. One of them is they tend to have lower urinary tract infections. And the other thing is that eventually they'll have or develop hip dysplasia, which is that, you know, because they're so big, they'll have issues with their hips of their hind legs. So all of that information that I'm telling you guys was obviously in my mind. It's not something that you go through. You don't go through that checklist. You just know that and it's in you. And that this is information that informs any decision I'll make. And on top of that, I didn't want to stress her out. But as the days went by, a week went by, and we had a situation where she was not only going to the bathroom all the time, and she was peeing, so there was no UTI again, because it's like a human. If you have a UTI, you want to go to the bathroom, but you cannot pee because there's bacteria, something is happening, and you do have to go to the doctor because it's going to get worse. It hurts and all that. So I try to rationalize in my brain what was happening because I didn't want to inflict more pain on her because I didn't want to feel guilty. Again, take all the information in. I didn't want to feel guilty that I would take her out of her environment and she didn't have nothing. So one day she went to the litter box and then she pooped. And when she came out of the litter box, I could see blood on her fur. That's an emergency. But because I've worked on vet hospitals and I've dealt with emergency rooms, I know that right now it's very hard for you to get to an emergency room, even if it's an emergency. And so when you have a pet, the checklist that you have to go through is, are they eating? Are they drinking? Yes, yes. Okay. Activity levels? Good. If you check those boxes and if they go to the bathroom regularly, as in they're peeing and pooping, if you go through the checklist, that means that it's not an emergency, as you may believe, unless they have an injury or if something happened that you can see, obviously that's a different thing. But when it comes to behavior, you want to check those. If a cat stops eating, that's a big problem. But overall, if I go through the checklist, everything is fine, it's not an emergency, it can wait. But when you see blood, that's something else. So I started to feel guilty about the fact that I didn't go sooner to call someone or to make an appointment or to just, I have an issue with, if I can prevent it, I should have. So I'm still dealing with that. So I have always choices to make. Either I will feel sorry for myself. Again, this is all me, ego and past traumas and all the psychological time. I'm throwing all the terms I can at you. Or I can choose what to do next. But there's a brief moment where you stay stuck in between feeling sorry for yourself and doing something. And that's where I was. Because I wanted to assess the situation in a way that I was not going to create more pain for her. So that night, I called the emergency room, and as I had predicted it, it was 8 p.m., and the emergency room said, yes, there's an emergency. Unfortunately, we're at capacity until 10:30. So you may want to try to call X, Y, and Z to see if they can take you in. Now, you guys already know that the emergency rooms are very expensive. Whether you're a human or an animal, they're always more because, you know, they are taking their time to fit you in. And it's after business hours, or they're trying to, you know, assess the situation as quickly as possible. You don't have, if you are walking, obviously you don't need an appointment. So there's a lot that goes on just going to an emergency room. And so the deal was done, and I wasn't going to wait, obviously, until 10:30 to call again with the hoping that they would be a little bit, you know, more open to take the cat in. And it was late. She has a schedule. So I said, if she has already survived a week, I'm going to have to eat up those, 12 hours, because at 8 a.m. I was going to start calling people. And that's what I did. So I make that decision, but it took a while for me to get to that decision. Now, as an outsider, you may say, oh, well, you know, if you're so worried about it, just take her to the vet office. But as I've said, everything, you know, everything that has come up until this point, it was goes through my mind without me really analyzing everything, because it's just implied in every decision I'm going to make. On top of that, the issue with money, too. Like, that's a lot of money for, you know, to go to an emergency room or in general. And, you know, right now there's inflation and all that. So there's a lot of things that happen. And I also have a wound with money and relationship with money. So everything in the pot comes together, even though I don't have any issues with money, as in, you know, what we can afford. It's still in me. So that's my belief. So that's something that I have to always address and get myself out of that thinking constantly. So it's a struggle a little bit. So the next day, obviously, I already knew that it was going to be hard. See how I am setting myself up for drama and suffering and pain. I knew it was going to be hard, but I still, 7:59, I started calling places. And no, we can see you next week. No, they're not taking in new patients. Or no, they're not taking any new calls right now. You have to wait. You have to wait for them to call you back. And I'm like, look, a UTI or a potential UTI has to be seen. I cannot wait another week because the cat may be in pain, or that something worse can happen if I wait. Thankfully, I found a place 4 minutes away from my house. I never knew this place existed. I just trusted that I was going to find somebody to fit me in. But usually when it comes to cats, you want the closest possible, unless that's for me. I mean, talking about my own experience, because you don't want them to be in the carrier, in the car for so long, because that's stressing time. So I got to the place and they took the x-rays. They did everything they thought they needed to do. It was a new time client. Thank God I had already prepped for this, and I had asked the previous hospital to send me the medical records. Now, there is a difference between medical records and then your summary visit. You have to ask for the medical records. Vets, new vets that you're taking your pets to, need the medical records, as in medical notes and doctor's notes and everything that happened in the visit. What we usually get, it's a summary, because you don't need to know all the information. They are the ones who need to have their own notes. So always you need to ask for medical records, not invoices, not summary visits. I've dealt with that, and that's why I'm telling you. And it's just easier for people, you know, in the office to say, oh, okay, we have the medical records, don't worry about it. They can make more room for you, knowing that there's less work they have to do for you. So I already have the medical records with me, and then I called, I sent them, and then everything was done. I took her to the vet. You know, we needed to make sure that she didn't have any stones or any blockages happening. Because I had read, unfortunately, once I went to the internet and I read that sometimes cats can have tumors that will block a little bit the coming in and out of the pee. That was my fault. And I remember that after that, I never went on the internet again trying to find answers, because that will send me on another, you know, spinning around until I feel like I'm about to die. So during the visit, I told them exactly what had happened, and they confirmed what I already knew, but I didn't know in medical terms. So cats don't like to be taken out of their routine. Unfortunately, we do have to do that if we have to take them to the vet for their shots or if there's a medical issue. But physically, they will respond, or their bodies will react in a different way to stressors. And for Lola specifically, who's a highly sensitive cat, she manifests her stress by doing the pee dance. And that creates a stress on the canal where the pee comes out, because she's struggling to pee. So, you know, a cat, if they want to pee, they go in, they dig a little bit of a hole, they sit down, pee comes out, you know, they bury it, they flush, and they come out. What was happening with hers was she was making a hole, and she was sitting down longer than I had become accustomed to. So she was struggling to push the pee out, which created an inflammation in her body. And that's why it was struggling. And hence, we believe that she was in pain. So one of the things that the doctor told me was, you know, she may need Prozac. Prozac, as in for cats and dogs, it's called fluoxetine, which is like the highest level. And then there's always gabapentin for cats and trazodone for dogs. Again, I've worked at an animal hospital, thank God, so I kind of know the terms. So she said, because she's so highly emotional, we need to first address environment. So we address that. And then you need to have feel away with you, which I do have. And this is what you're going to do. We're going to give her gabapentin. And for a week, just to calm her down. And if she's in pain, then she no longer has to feel pain. And also, I think it's Prazodan. It's a muscle relaxer, so she doesn't have to tighten her muscles all the time to go to the bathroom. And, you know, we would like to actually get a urine sample. And the way that you have two choices when it comes to cats to get a urine sample. One of them is that they give you, I think it's called a cat... It's a kit for cats, so that you change the litter and you put this special litter, and this special litter, it doesn't absorb the pee, and then you get the sample from them. It's very tough if you have cats. The other way, and it's a more painful way, is that they will insert a needle into the cat's belly to get the urine, and that's painful. For sure, 100%. So they were gonna do that, but again, she didn't have any pee because she was peeing all the time, and she had peed before we left. So she didn't have any pee, and she said, "Look, we can either give her some water," and she was already stressed out. She was under the chair because I was sitting down, and she was under the chair because, of course, they took her to the X-ray room. These people that she didn't know were like handling her. We can wait, and then we do it again. We put the needle in. We try to get the pee out. We do an in-house test, which means that they would do it right away to see if she has any bacteria or not. And then we address the issue and give you antibiotics, or we give you antibiotics either way. And, you know, we assume that she has a UTI. And I said, let's assume she has a UTI. Let's give her an injection, thank God, because it's hard to give cat pills or anything that has to do with medicine. They won't take it if they smell something icky. And we'll assume she has it, and then she'll get better. So she was like, your cat is so sensitive that anything that stresses her out will manifest it in this way. And she's hurting herself by doing this. So that's something that you have to consider and you have to keep in mind is that this is something that's going to happen to her. So whenever it happens, just give us a call and we'll give you a prescription and we'll handle that. But also, you know, in your environment needs to change a little bit. So I have added things to the house. I have done everything she needs thus far. I have changed her diet as well. You know, there's special food that you need a prescription for. SO, it's for the urinary issues, and she's a baby, you know, for all intents and purposes, she's still a baby compared to cats that I've seen that have urinary issues there that are 13 years old. But okay, will give her that food. I have to change foods. I have to get the prescription. But not only that, I need to get a specific one that says calm, which means that she will always be calm. I have the feel away, which is hormones or is it hormones? I don't remember the name right now, but it's basically pheromones. Pheromones that makes them feel like they are with their mother. And it calms them down at morning, at night. It lasts for 4 hours, so she's calm all the time. Now, you might say, Alejandra, if your cat is fucking sick, just take her to the vet. Obviously. Hey, I'm with you. And we're going to get to the book. I'm with you. But it's not easy getting there because of everything that what I just said, starting the whole story. And it got to the point where I started crying because I felt like I didn't want to fail her. Does that make sense? And it's not about her. It's about me. And I've said it before, I think, when it comes to my cats, that what I'm learning is that I cannot be always in that boohoo mindset. So, yes, you can be practical. And that's something that I've never been. And to some extent, I've never, when I'm emotionally involved in something, I cannot be practical. I block myself because I fear failure. So this is the thing. I was sitting in my car and I was going to take her to the vet and I was starting the car and I said, Alejandra, first of all, you have to breathe. That's one thing that is always going to help you. You have to breathe. You have to focus on just one conscious breath. So I sat down in my car and I said, okay. And I started to feel that voice coming over saying, oh my God, we're going to go. What's going to happen? We're going to say, what if this? What if that? What is the other? And then the other side of me, the observer said, whatever she has, she has. We're only going to know what she has. But she already has it. Whether that's a tumor, whether that's a UTI, whether that's nothing, she already has something or nothing. So don't worry about that. So that's a choice you make, remember. So that shut down the perpetuating the suffering. I took another breath and I prayed, as in I talked to my guides and said, please just guide me and allow me to stay present so that I'm able to tend to her instead of focusing on myself. That's it. That's a prayer. You're communicating something, you're asking for something, or you're thanking something or someone. And I said, you need to calm yourself because if not, you're living in the past. It's already up until this point because my mind wanted to take me to that road of shame and guilt because I didn't do something in the beginning. Because I should have, as soon as I hear myself saying that, I shut it down on the other side and I said, just take a breath. It's done. It's done. And that's the tough love we need to learn how to give ourselves. It's done. You're not going to do anything by just going down that road because it's over. The past doesn't exist anymore. And I started driving. The cat was crying, obviously, because she didn't want to be there. That's fine. I was calming her. Remember, I have to stay present for her. And pets are very sensitive to our energies. So I drove there. I did all that. I came home. I had to go to the pharmacy to get the medicine. I had to do a bunch of things after that. So I took her home and then, you know, the whole day I was avoiding or shutting down, going down the path. If I had just done it when she bled the first time, we wouldn't be here. But maybe we would have just thought that it was a UTI and not something more. We would have just dismissed it as, oh, it's just a one-time thing instead of that's just who she is. And that's what's happening to her. And fluoxetine, aka Prozac, is an option. And that's just how her brain works. That's how she is. So could I have avoided pain? We don't know if she's in pain. We're assuming she's in pain. That's why she has pain medication. Yeah, sure. We could have. I could have avoided that. But I didn't. It's done. Going down the woo, boohoo, boohoo road, it's not going to help me make decisions today. But I did learn something, is that I do have a fear and a judgment of failure still. When it comes to specifically avoiding pain in others, especially my cats, because I know that my cats didn't choose me. I chose them. They are my responsibility. They are an extension of my consciousness. So if I fail, let's say in the podcast, a career, whatever, I don't give a fuck. I don't care. I have come to that. But I think I have compartmentalized every single thing in my head. And so I have to deal with other people's emotions, as in I have to deal with them at a direct relationship with me. Like if I do something, quote unquote, wrong and they suffer, it's my fault. And I know how that feels because I've been on the other end. So that's a problem. So why am I so afraid of failure? Because I don't want to be a bad person. That's still a core belief of mine. Now, I may have resolved it little by little, but this is a big discovery. And this is something that Iyanla does in her book, Yesterday I Cried. And why do I believe I am a bad person? Because when I was younger, my parents would punish me if I didn't do the right thing. And the right thing is not something written in like black and white. It was up to them what the right thing was. So I always, on paper, everything needs to look good. So me telling the story on paper, as in the question would be, why didn't you take her to the vet sooner? That is a representation of my failure. Because I'm blocking myself from making decisions. So on paper, I'm a bad person and I should be punished. You get what I'm saying? That's layers upon layers upon layers of trauma. And why are you afraid to be punished? Because I would reinforce that I am bad and I don't deserve what I have. Let's keep going. And why do I believe that I don't deserve what I have? Because even though I did the right things on paper, allegedly, my parents never loved me the way I needed them to. Boom. On the surface, it's one thing. But you gotta break it down. You have to break those walls down. And it took me that day. I kept asking myself that question because I had just done Yesterday I Cried, and I had all the questions that she posed herself during her stories fresh. Why am I so afraid? Why can't I be practical when it comes to them, especially the cats, because they are my responsibility? Why can't I? They depend on me. If I fail, they suffer. I don't want that. So instead of making decisions that to the listener would be, yeah, duh, it's tough for me to get there because my priority is not solving the issue per se, if there was one. My priority is not to create more pain. And in my head, not to create more pain means do not take them out of their environment. Don't stress them more than they already are. Instead of, I don't want to create more pain, let me take them to the vet. That's what we have to do every time a challenge comes up. And many times throughout the story, and even after the fact, before I started reading this book, so it's been this, I took them on Monday, it's Wednesday. I've always had that little voice in my head saying, if only you would have done it the first time you saw it. But then the other side says, you didn't know. Now you know. And you shut it down. You get where I'm going with this. It's hard for me still to accept that I didn't know. And it's a fact, I didn't know for sure. But when I knew that something was off and I was like, okay, we need to do something, I did it. So it's not about going back in time because now we're moving. It doesn't exist. It's over. She has the medication. She's good. But it's about me being stuck in preventing pain. their pain because they depend on me. And that reflects how it impacted when I was home and nobody prevented my pain. Matter of fact, they only created pain. And I didn't have a choice when I was younger because I didn't know. And they are a huge fucking responsibility. And I have cats. That's why I'm very adamant about my message regarding family and having to create a family. How painful it is for kids to grow up in environments where they're toxic or people have not resolved their issues or there's abuse just because of that. Now, I hope that you understand where I'm coming from. So I needed to say that. Now let's get to the book. Oh my God, 45 minutes. Well, it's going to be a long one. So I wasn't planning on making an episodes. It's just going to be 4 or 5 episodes, but I wasn't planning on making episodes on this book, but I like sometimes going to Walmart because they have a book section, and you know how sometimes you see books, you're like, oh my God, this book still exists. Okay. I'll take a copy. I'm still trying to find, you know, a couple of books. Sometimes I go and I just look around to see if they have them because sometimes you find some good gems. But I have here in my hand The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom. And it says a Toltec wisdom book. So again, we're going to go along the same line of what we've been talking about. It's just different stories. And I hope that whatever vocabulary, whatever messages come through in each book, they reach you some way somehow. So we're going to talk about, so there's four agreements that he talks about, but we're going to talk about what happens prior to the agreement, as in how he came to this realization. And it, again, it's a very small book. It's a quick read, and it's very simple, straightforward, and he's very open about him being a very spiritual man and learning from spirituality from his family, and you know, he's Mexican, so there's definitely influences from his culture. Again, it's what works for you. So let's see. So one night, he says that he had this realization, and he says, I am made of light, I am made of stars. And this is not something that I've heard just right now. I've heard it before. There are things that are in the stars that we have in our own bodies, like we're made of. That's why when you... Some people say when you see a rock, God is in there. When you see a tree, God's in there. God's everywhere. Now, he describes this as the light, and that's just another word for what we are talking about. So whatever resonates with you, works for you, use it. So he says, he also saw that matter is a mirror. Everything is a mirror that reflects light and creates image of that light. The real us is pure love, pure light. He saw himself in everything, in every human, in every animal, in every tree, in the water, in the rain, in the clouds, in the earth. So he says that we are light, and then we, as in the body we occupy, is just a mirror that reflects that light. And then he talks about the world of illusion. So he says that we're always dreaming. The brain is always processing a dream, and because we're awake, we have a timeline, but when we go to sleep, everything is rearranged in our brains. He says, matter is a mirror, and the smoke in between is what keeps us from knowing what we are. And I think that the smoke, because it's the chapter is called Smoky Mirror, if I'm not mistaken. Well, it's the introduction, but the next one, it's the Smoky Mirror. It's basically what I perceive to be the ego. And so for us to become aligned with the light, God consciousness, the force of life, whatever you want to call it, we gotta clear the smoke so that we can be in line with the light and we can be our true self, our true selves. And so there's no separation from me with another person, because even though we may look differently. We're still coming from the same source. That's another word, source, light, God, consciousness, the force of life. So let's see. And on chapter one, he talks about what I've been saying about programming. When we're young, we're told a certain set of rules, a certain set of beliefs, and we're told a story. And then we go out into the world, and even though we may not agree with that story, we perpetuate it because that's all we know. And so the idea of the podcast is that we can lean into the unknown or open ourselves up to the possibility of something that may be new, but it may resonate with a part of you, maybe not your mind, but somewhere in you, you're like, huh. And then you let it go. That means that a part of you that is not the ego has connected with something that goes beyond what you've been taught. So he says, the outside dream has so many rules that when a new human is born, we hook the child's attention and introduce these rules into his or her mind. The outside dream uses mom and dad, the schools and religion to teach us how to dream. The adults around us hooked our attention and put information into our minds through repetition. That is the way we learned everything we know. That's why my experience and the way I see life is not how you see life. Again, go back to the story that I just told. Yeah, some people are going to say, just take him to the fucking vet. Yeah, I could, but there's stuff in between that I am still dealing with that doesn't allow me to make those decisions. But I have to be responsible for them. I have to. It's my responsibility. I have to deal with that. And that's why when, you know, that blaming, shaming comes into play after the fact, after I have made the appointment and after I have taken the cat to the vet, that's my responsibility to either shut it down or I can engage with it and go to that boohoo lane and then say, well, we're not getting anywhere. So now my practical brain is taking over and saying, okay, enough. You felt sorry for yourself. Just keep it pushing. Doesn't mean that I don't validate how I feel. It means that I merge what I'm doing with how I'm feeling and see what's the best course of action instead of staying in the past and saying, boo-hoo, I should have done something. Well, I did. Continue. We never had the opportunity to choose what to believe or what not to believe. We never chose even the smallest of these agreements. We didn't even choose our own name. We didn't choose these beliefs, and we may have rebelled against them, but we were not strong enough to win the rebellion. And in the beginning of the podcast, go back and listen. Some of us say, no, I don't want to be like my mom. No, I don't want to be like my dad. I'm going to be different. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. Yeah, but the source of your information is them. Unless you have opened yourself up to a new possibility, a new opportunity, different things, different cultures, different situations, something outside of yourself and allowed yourself to learn something new, you're going to become a version of them. My dad didn't want to be like his father, and he became a modern version of his father. What he hated, the behavior he didn't want to repeat, he did. So what are we talking about here? And again, we never chose this life. That's why if you want to be a parent or you're a parent, you have to read the book. You have to read a book. Second of all, you have to be open to the possibility of your child teaching you something. It's not about your way or the highway. Yes, there's a set of rules. Yeah, we have to live in a society. Thus far, we can all agree to that. But it doesn't mean that that's the only way. So it's not about being a hippie and it's not about being a dictator. It's about the shades of gray. And then obviously once they are old enough, they have to take responsibility for whatever you gave them or not, you know, whatever you didn't give them. So he emphasizes the fact that, of course, we're brought up in a system of reward and punishment. And that's the thing. We never get to experience a balance in between the programming and then something more. Because we are always focused on we have to make money. We have to accumulate wealth. We need attention. We need to be liked. We need love. We need this. We need that. We lack everything and we need to go out into the world to get it. And then if you are in a conservative society of or a culture where religion is just attached to it, they teach you that you're a sinner and you're going to go to hell and you need God and you're shit. Okay, so where's the other side, which is the spirituality, and you're a human being, you are a spiritual being having a human experience and you have a purpose in life and you are love and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't happen until we're older for some of us or most of us. So that's how we perpetuate pain. So he says, we soon develop a need to hook other people's attention in order to get the reward. We start pretending to be what we are not just to please others, just to be good enough for someone else. Again, mommy issues, daddy issues. Your inner child is looking for whatever they didn't get when they were younger. So you're always going to be stuck in that cycle until you realize that whatever you're looking for, you're never going to find because you already have it. That's the gag. Now that's the tea. So it says we become a copy of mama's beliefs, daddy's beliefs, society's beliefs, and religion's beliefs. We rebel because we are defending our freedom, and then we become our own domesticator. And he calls the belief system the book of law. So it's kind of like what Dr. Eger said, the choice, the book, The Choice, which he says, we become our own, we become our own prisoner in our prison that we have built. So it wasn't about Hitler. It wasn't about Mengele. It was about her and her beliefs and what she thought and what she hadn't processed. And she got stuck there and she was never going to get out because she thought that, you know, once the things that happened to her, it was over. The game is over. And so, yes, we want to rebel. And that's why we're dismissed all the time. And we're told that's just our teenage years. But the truth of the matter is that we are getting in contact with our emotions. Of course, we're in that hormonal state, but we get in contact with our emotions and we believe that this is not right, or this is not what I like, or this is not what I wanted. And then you get told you need to get back in line and do what you're told. If not, you're never going to be successful. And we trade that belief of, oh, I want to be successful, and we basically sell our souls. Because we want mom and dad to approve of us. So he says that there's another part called the victim, and what I was talking about, poor me, I'm not good enough, I'm not intelligent enough. And then we block our solar plexus. That's one of the chakras. That's the third chakra coming from the root up. That's the yellow one. And we live in fear. And we have a problem when we want to break these rules that we were told. Emotional wounds come out, and, you know, we feel unsafe because, remember, if you are told that what you thought wasn't, it feels unsafe. I would rather be afraid and comfortable than feel unsafe, but still afraid, but with the opportunity of learning something about myself. And again, it's an agreement that we have made with society and our families that this is how things are. That's why when people say, oh, you should have a good relationship with your parents, I say, fuck you, because not everybody should have or needs to have a good relationship with their parents. And it's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street. And if the other person is not putting what you're giving, then what are we talking about here? Stop perpetuating shame and blame. Oh, well, their parents are old and the kids are not around. Well, we should ask the kids what their parents did when they were younger. Because the kids didn't come out of nowhere. They came out of a home, and the parents are getting what they gave. So stop it, because I hate when I see that. Oh, no, I should take care of my... No, you shouldn't. You know, grown folks are grown folks. So he also talks about how when we make a mistake, we perpetuate punishment over and over again. Because you make a mistake, you fix it. That's what I was talking about. I made a mistake, and I was going to go to Boohoo Lane and cross Crimea River Street when I realized that it's not helping the situation. We need to move forward. We need to stay present and we need to move forward. And I cannot be in that mindset because I'm not paying attention to the now. So that's what he calls true injustice. So He says that we suffer because we believe all the lies we've been told, as in the programming, because everything you believe about yourself, you were told. Everything you believe about other people, you were told. The things you like are not like you were told. The good and the bad, you were told. Society told you. So there's a lot of things that we block ourselves from doing. And that's why there's a rebellion period where we test these boundaries and we say, okay, but what about here? What about here? Because we're told that we live in a very restrictive environment where everybody thinks that, sure, these rules make sense. But at the same time, it's like, but why? And can we have a conversation about them? Doesn't mean that I'm not going to accept them eventually. It just means that I want to know deep down where they're coming from and why they make sense. And if you grew up like me, it's kind of like, this is what it is and shut the fuck up type of way of teaching. And so, and when you go and ask questions, oh, honey, I think I've talked about it before. Let's continue. So it says here, religions say that hell is a place of punishment, a place of fear, pain, and suffering, a place where the fire burns you. And the truth of the matter is that we are already in hell in our minds do you live in fear? Do you feel pain from the past? Are you perpetuating suffering? Like, where is that in your mind? So there's no place that our souls go. And as a matter of fact, I want to know how the church got this, you know, idea that there's a hell, and how can that be proven? We don't know, but the idea of something that creates gets in touch with our fear will make you comply, even though you know that you're lying to the church, because yeah, you can go and say, you know, pray and say you're sorry and you did this and you did that. But if you don't really address the issue, you're going to go back to these streets and do the same thing again. So what are we really talking about here? I don't subscribe to the hell and heaven thing, but that's just me. So here it says, death is not the biggest fear we have. Our biggest fear is taking the risk to be alive. We have learned to live our lives trying to satisfy other people's demands, and we have created an image of perfection. And the issue is that we haven't forgiven ourselves for not being what we wish to be, or rather what we believe we should be. So in front of people, if we make a mistake, we deny them and cover them up. But as soon as we're alone, the judge comes so strong, the guilt is so strong, and we feel stupid or so bad or so unworthy. And that is why when I started this podcast, I said, even when you're alone, when it's just you, yourself, and you sitting down in your room, it's very hard to admit to certain things because there's still someone in us, in our brains, let's call it the ego, that, or the image of mom and dad that says, you're wrong, you're shit, you're not worthy, you did this, you're bad, you'll always be bad. And so that negative self-talk reinforces the idea that we should never tell the truth, we should deny ourselves, we should never be ourselves, because if we even acknowledge that, that's why it's so powerful to live in acknowledgement of what is, awareness of what is, and live in the present moment. It is so powerful, those voices, they are so powerful that we stunt our growth because we believe we're going to get punished. Self-abuse is exactly the limit that you will tolerate from someone else. Again, he says that, sure, you might have been victim of abuse when you were younger, but then you take that with you and you abuse yourself. Again, negative self-talk is one of them. Or you engage in relationships where if they abuse a little less than you abuse yourself, you take it because you deserve it, because you're bad. But if somebody abuses more than you abuse yourself, then you get out because that's too much. And usually that doesn't happen. We stay in relationships. If you have been in abusive relationships or in abusive environments, you know that we'll stay because deep down we know these streets. They feel familiar. We confuse pain with love. And so we stay in places where we perpetuate what we know, our beliefs, our experience. And so he says the whole logic behind this is this: I deserve it. This person is doing me a favor by being with me. I'm not worthy of love and respect. I'm not good enough. So It's a very quick chapter. I think I could have done it in like 20 minutes, but I had to talk about what I talked about. But before we finish this, he says that, you know, there are certain agreements that you engage in and accept. And he says, in these agreements, you say, this is what I am. This is what I believe. I can do certain things and some things I cannot do. This is reality. This is fantasy. This is possible. That's impossible. And then each time you break an agreement, so what we've been talking about, you know, if you embark on a healing journey and you kind of face what happened, you push a little bit, push back a little bit on what you've been told. He says all the power you use to create it returns to you, because we're constantly giving our power away and we're constantly telling the world what we've been told. We don't have an original thought. We don't. It's coming from somewhere, obviously. The problem is that not only that's a big problem, is that we don't know that. And on top of that, those thoughts just reinforce our pain. So what are we really doing here? And then we take a turn and say, oh, no, it's their fault. Oh, no, it's you, 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 you. And we sing the song, the you song, until we die and never take responsibility, never acknowledge, never appreciate, never give ourselves love. We are always looking for something. Because if you were programmed like that when you were at your most vulnerable, unless you have acknowledged that, unless you came out of the dream and said, whoa, 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 what? I'm shit? What? Why? Why? If you have never questioned what you were told, whether that's society, religion, your parents and all that, and it's a long process, so don't even worry about how long it's going to take or when is it going to end. It's going to end when you die. Okay? In the meantime, enjoy the self-discovery journey. That's what I've been talking about this whole time. I'm just giving you a different perspective. So, anyway, this is before the four agreements. So, on next chapter, I'm going to talk about agreement number one. And if they're too short, I may combine. We'll see. But that's it. We're going to do this book before we go to Jordan Peterson. Again, this is The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom. You can get it anywhere. It's a very quick read. I highly recommend it. I haven't read the whole book, but I already know I'm going to like it, because if just the beginning of the book, it's like this, different language, same message, then I'm pretty sure I'm going to like what he has to say, and I'm open to receiving the message. Anyway, that's all for today. Again, remember to subscribe, share. You know my Instagram, at ellavivanco29. Every Monday, there is a new episode. We have done a bunch of books. I have done a bunch of stories. There is content for you to go back and listen to. Thank you so much again, and I'll see you next week. And with that, I say till next time. Bye.